return them. What happens to all the... You did, you returned them. So you use them in the book with the publisher, and then you returned everything. Yeah, you see, today, that would be put on the web and on a digital CD. And, wow, that's... You were so ahead of your time. That's so good you captured.
Yeah, they were very good for me, to me, sending me so much of their post-personal lives.
When did it strike you during your interviewing that what you were capturing no longer mattered, who was a Hall of Famer, who was a cup of coffee player, that your master work, in other words, would highlight their lives so that it didn't even matter what their averages were or pitching records?
I avoided Hall of Famers. I didn't want Hall of Famers. They had been fussed over too much. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of them in there. Eddie was in the uniform. He must have been at that time. There's no indication in that book about who is and who isn't in the Hall.
That's right, there isn't.
Deliberately.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are in the Hall of Fame now, but they weren't when I did the interview. Stanley Kovalevsky was in the Hall, is now in. Goose Gosselin is now in. Harry Hooper is now in. And I don't know others. I think Rube Markwart came after also. That is after the book.
Mm-hmm.
The only one I remember that was in the Hall, you can check it, is Sam Crawford.
Oh, okay. Tommy Leach is the oldest here, and followed by Sam Crawford. Was there a difference in their approach towards being interviewed or towards baseball?
No, everybody knows.
They were contemporaries.
They were having delighted, and afterwards, I shouldn't have kept all this stuff. Tommy Leach's daughter wrote me how important it is for her daddy that he was there. And so I got in a correspondence with her. So Sam, there wasn't anybody to do something like that. But usually I got letters from the... I got a letter from Al Bridwell's daughter to the same extent. You know, a lot of that, they were rejuvenated.
Mm-hmm.
And now I look at it, and then I look at it, and it became quickly obvious to me, but it was a surprise when I was told this. Sam Crawford, after 40 days, and we were getting ready to say goodbye, he said, I was surprised to hear him say, he said, "Well, I kept you interested for 4 days." I was thinking that I was trying to keep him interested, but he was trying to keep me interested. And he was congratulating himself that he kept me interested that long. And that was an early time I started to realize that these people, they don't want me to go away.
And the people who responded after the book came out, after 1966, you heard from players, I don't mean Bill Berger, I mean other players, that probably said no, like maybe Dick Bartelli did, or some of the players who told you no.
I should imagine, but I didn't hear from most of them.
Oh, okay.
Somebody told me Dick Bart, Billy Rogel, and Dick Bartell confused because they were both
scrappy
short stocks. And they remind me of each other. I think Dick Bartell wishes he had said yes.
I think so too, because later on he did the book with Norman Mott.
And that was a good book.
Oh, it was. Rowdy
and
Richard,
yeah.
I have it. I agree. That's, the trust factor is so important because we all have a story to tell.
But these guys have a lot of great stories to tell.
That's right. And the good thing about being interviewed is, in the interviewee controls what goes on the cassette, on the tape.
I remember after Stanley, he's another one that was elected to the Hall of Fame after the book, Stanley Kowalewski. I did pretty good at that time. Stanley Kowalewski, he had a brother, you know. What was the brother's name? They both...
Dilly?
No, they both picked in the big leagues.
Wow.
But they, Stanley's...
I could check Total Baseball.
It's right in there, on the Stanley's chapter.
Or I could check the index.
Yeah,
the
that's right. That's the easiest.
Frank.
No.
Harry.
Yeah.
There's a few Jacob and John. There are several Kowalewskis before Stanley.
Is that so?
Yeah. And all on the same page. 109 is Frank.
They were brothers,
Harry,
huh?
Sure. Frank, Harry, Jacob, John are all on page 109.
Well, Harry, and Stanley, they became big league pitchers. Well, he says in the chapter, but we would never pitch against each other.
Mm-hmm. Wow, five brothers. That was like the Sullivan brothers in World War II.
Yeah, there was another batch of brothers played for the Tigers and others. I can't remember their names right off. Anyway, I was going to say that after Stanley was elected to the Hall of Fame, I went up to the induction, or maybe it was the next year I went up to the induction, and I was sitting in the lobby of the Ura Zagar, and once when you go up there, you should stay at the Ura Zagar,
really?
Instead of at where
at
you...
Rose Edwards.
That's right.
Well,
just once you
okay.
should stay at the Ura Zagar.
Not this year, but I will. In your memory, I will.
In my memory, Jesus Christ.
Well...
In my honor.
That's pretty
and
expensive.
That's in my honor,
okay, in
not
your
my
honor.
Memory.
I will. In your honor.
Anyway, I was up there, so you should go. The Ura Zagar is quite a place.
It looks imposing.
Although I told you that they kicked Goose Goslin out, didn't they? Anyway, I was sitting in the library. If you remind me, I'll tell you what happened. I was sitting in the lobby, and there was all of people milling around, all of famous. And by the way, then you could go
mingle.
Into the and now you can't. They have guards at the door. Yeah, but then you could. And I was sitting in an easy chair, and I saw Mrs. Kowalewski sitting in a. On a sofa. I hadn't seen Stanley or her for two or three years, but I figured that she probably wouldn't remember me. So I walked over and sat down next to her, and I said, "Why are you here?" And she said, "My husband is a Hall of Famer." And I said, "Who? Who's that?" And she said, "Stanley Kowalewski." I said, "I've never heard of him." Did he, what was he, a first best baseman? She got really upset. She said, "No, he's a pitcher." And I said, "You remember me?"
That broke the ice.
And she repeated that story till the day she died. And then I had tricked her.
What about Goose Goslin?
Oh, I went up for the Goose's induction. And I didn't tell you this.
Tell me anyway.
All right. I went up to the Goose's induction, and the Goose brought along his girlfriend. There's a lot of girlfriends
I've been
in this business. Yes. And she was a delightful person, his girlfriend. And they didn't live together because the Goose lived in this little trailer on the edge of the Chesapeake Bay, and he sold fishing equipment and bait and stuff like that. He was a very happy man, but he wasn't exactly wealthy. Anyway, so he brought his girlfriend, his brother, his nephew, his brother's son, and me. That was the party. They went to the Hall of Fame, and I got a separate room, and the Goose and his girlfriend got a separate room, and his brother and his nephew there. So we had three rooms. Mm-hmm. And we went, the goose was inducted. He started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
When he was inducted, he really, he broke down. Anyway, afterwards, we went back to the hotel. The goose said, you know, I never really saw the whole thing. He says, I was, you know, I'm in it, but I never saw it. I'd like to go through it. So somebody said, well, let's take a map, and then we'll go through the whole thing. And just as somebody was getting ready to take a nap or something, the phone rang. It was their desk clerk. And he said, you have to leave the hotel by 1 o'clock, you know, Mr. Gosling. And he said, what are you talking about? I'm going to stay till tomorrow. And the guy said, Mr. Goblin, we have sent you 4 letters asking you if you would like to stay an extra night. And you didn't answer any of them. And now we have a convention coming in, and you and your party will have to vacate their rooms, and we're sorry. So I thought I'd do some good. I called up Paul Kerr. He was then the head of the Hall of Fame, and he said he couldn't do a thing. And then I called up Ken Smith. He was a PR guy for the Hall. He used to write for the Daily News, and he couldn't do it. So we had to wait.
And that was induction weekend. You can't find any place.
No. And we had, so the goose was honored in the morning and kicked out in the afternoon.
Did it really change his mindset towards
the
world?
He
was able to take it in stride?
He took life in stride.
Yeah, if you live in a trailer, I think that happens. You learn to take everything.
I think on the tape they included when the goose got traded from the Washington Senators to the St. Louis Browns. And I think that's on the tape. And he says, 2 minutes after he's depressed because he's going to it in the last
from
tape,
the second last to the last.
Oh,
wow.
2 minutes later, he's happy.
I like it when players don't take that to heart.
You can see it, you can hear it on the tape, how he's totally rejuvenated before he has a chance to take a long breath.
And I'm also curious from something you said about when players from this generation break down, because it means so much for them to be inducted. This is the lifetime goal.
Yeah, the goose got broke down, started to cry.
And I wonder if players from my generation feel, again, that entitlement that they would never occur to them to break down or to feel so honored and grateful to be there, to be a Hall of Famer. It, somebody once said that, you know, they're trained in minor leagues to expect to be inducted before they even put on a big league uniform. And I don't want to paint all of them now, because they're not, and especially you see somebody like Jeter who's going to play hard no matter what he's paid, you know, and there are players like that today that give everything, whatever, Kirby Puckett, you know, there's a lot of them, so I don't want to paint them all. Now, what did I leave out that you would like on the tape? What unasked question?
Sure, I'll think of them in the future, you know, that always happens. Like when somebody says something to you that is a cutting remark, you have no response, and then 2 days later you think of the perfect response that will cut them to 15 pieces. Only it's too late then.
So I take it that today's interview is not ending, it will be continued, but the tape will just be shut off for now?
There was a couple of things I wanted to mention.
Good.
George McBride.
That's right, yes.
And What's the other one's name? See, I wouldn't remember this before.
We can play the tape back.
No.
Well, George McBride was the shortstop for the Senators.
Yeah, and I interviewed him. He was he played for Walter Johnson for years, and but he had nothing to say, really. The other one, it's Nick something again. George McBride and. If you look up in the great big encyclopedia and turn to the first Boston Red Sox 1915.
This might help.
No.
No. Okay.
No, you got to find the team rosters.
Yeah, I think that's 1953. I think the last time. Yeah. All right, so here's the rest. 1915.
Red Sox.
Are most of the players dead by now?
All.
Every single one.
Wow.
So you saw a lot of people leave.
Die, you mean?
Yeah.
Or as they say, pass?
Well, leave in the sense of you weren't really there at the bedside. So it's not like the death was in the room.
No, but I got...
But you must have felt losses every time.
An awful lot of phone calls and letters.
Yeah.
And when they died.
Was that the time that you would remember highlights of the interviews?
No. I just remember about the person, not the interview.
Because of the relationship developed after the interview?
Yeah. Also with their wives.
Right, and family. When did you know that you had enough material so that you didn't need to ask the player, could you put me in touch with this person or have you heard of that person? Do you know where so-and-so is?
I never did that
because
I found out it didn't work.
Okay.
They didn't like to talk about others.
Okay.
They were there to talk about themselves.
Understandably.
And so if I mentioned or asked them about somebody else,
sure.
They weren't happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted, and they gave little non-committal answers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't responsive to those sort of things because they were there to talk about their careers.
That's right.
And they didn't want to have it interrupted with somebody else's career. And where is that?
You might have thought, even after the first year, that you had enough material, but you were continuing so that...
I couldn't get it published.
Oh, that's why you were continuing. Because it was 3 years, wasn't it, from 63 to 65?
61 to this 65.
Wow, 5 years.
Nobody wanted to publish the book. I got turned down by Houghton Mifflin. Turned down by Prentiss Hall, I got turned down by Hope, Reinhardt, and Winston. I couldn't find a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Until this guy came in one day. And asked me what I was doing. And I told him about the baseball books. This guy was trying to sell me to do an economics book.
Oh.
Marty McHale.
That's it.
And what I wanted to mention about Marty McHale is, if you read the Baseball Digest, that is the Sabre publication,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's also true of George McBride, there you will see articles by Lawrence Ritter, the interviews.
Wow, I have to get a hold of them. See, I rejoined in the early 90s, so I'm missing everything before 1990. You mean the National Pastime and the Research Journal,
one
right?
Of the other.
Baseball Research Journal.
But I think it's the Research Journal.
Probably.
You'll see interviews
okay.
of Marty McHale and George McBride.
Mm-hmm. I'll get a hold
I
of
did
them.
Them.
Yeah.
But I didn't publish them.
Right.
I thought they were crummy interviews. So they're not in the book.
Right. But they're in
But they're the tapes. The tapes are in the Hall of Fame.
And Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame. Everything is in both places. Mm-hmm. And the reason they are in the National Park, the Baseball Research Journal, or the other one, is because they were not, I didn't write them. John Thorne wrote them.
Okay.
He wrote me a letter and said, I would like to write up the Marty McHale, and I think he said George McBride, I think they appeared something like I would like to write them up and publish them in the Sabre thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you do whatever you want. I just don't have anything to do with it because I didn't care for them.
Right.
And so one day I saw the article by Lawrence Ritter. And I didn't, still I didn't think I was very good.
Wow.
So that's how come you will find these articles supposedly by me, which are in the Sabre publications. I didn't write them.
So you've known John Thorne for a long time?
Yes.
You might have joined around the same time. You joined early 79.
I told you, John Thorne claims I am his idol.
Oh, really? So that puts him unanimously in everyone's company.
So,
mine too.
But he just went bankrupt.
No.
So I figured
that. He's so sweet.
I figured that being in the object of being idol doesn't help much.
Well, and you with your economics expertise.
Mm. Anyway, I like John very much.
I did
but
too.
He's, unfortunately, a lot of people are not happy with him because they lost a lot of money.
Right. Right.
And I lost the East Side, West Side, which is. Nobody knows where it is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Marty Capel lost all of his royalties from the Yankees book.
Yeah.
Don Zimmer lost all of his royalties from his book.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Rucker told me he lost $50,000, et cetera, and et cetera. So I wish that John was less impressed by me and
by your baseball expertise
right.
and more impressed by your economics
expertise.
Now, the publisher who wanted to publish your economics book was eventually the publisher of The Glory of Their Times.
Yeah.
But somebody did publish this. How did it happen?
The Glory of Their Times?
Yes.
I was sitting there in my office
mm-hmm.
in 1964 about.
Okay.
I'd been doing this for 3 years and was discouraged. And this guy named Stanley Hollowitz.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember his name. Stanley Hollowitz came in and he was a book a textbook salesman at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was at NYU. He was working for Macmillan Company as a textbook salesman.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Macmillan. Is
it? The copyright here.
Yeah,
Bob
but,
Macmillan
okay, that's
66.
Right. You've got the original. That's
yeah.
Okay, because the Enlarged is published by Morrow.
Oh, yes.
But that's Macmillan.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I was sitting in the office and he wants to know, did I want to write a textbook? And I said, no. And he said, what are you doing? And I told him about this book. And I said, nobody wants to publish it. Hope Ron Hart and Winston said no. And Prentice Hall said no. And Houghton Mifflin said, well, no, but there's no point of it. Let me continue it. And he said, let me show it to Bob Markell, who was his editor at Macmillan. Bob Markell was instrumental also in Macmillan
Encyclopedia.
You look at the very first Macmillan Encyclopedia, it says, editor-in-chief or something like that, Bob Markell.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob was interested in baseball
mm-hmm.
to begin with, and so this guy sent him a manuscript of about 3 or 4 chapters, that's all I had written up. and Bob sent me a $3,000 check.
He knew gold when it fell in his lap. He knew.
So I went back to work and started transcribing all of the rest of the interviews and making more of them.
That's a beautiful ending.
But almost that book wasn't published.
Almost.
If I had Stanley Howell Hollowitz had walked into my office that day, and he hadn't been interested
in selling.
Yeah, and Bob Markell hadn't been the guy who he sent it to. Mm-hmm. And
would you have stopped, or would you approach Norton, Doubleday, some of the other big publishing houses?
No, I was discouraged. The guy at Houghton Mifflin said to me, who I had published the economic stuff,
right.
He said to me, I brought the book to my editors, what you had suggested, and they all concluded, there's really no interest in these old ball players. Who cares?
What did he say when the book came out? I'm just curious.
No idea, because I never got in touch with him. But I always thank Stanley Hollowitz and Bob Markell.
You had already written Money by that time?
No. I had written a book on money and economic activity, but that wasn't the one, the money that became well known later on.
When did you write the book on beating the gambling odds?
That wasn't a book. That's
a little pamphlet.
It's a journal article.
Oh,
it's an article in an economics journal. An article in an economics journal. I don't remember when I wrote it. I don't know. 1975 or so.
Mm-hmm. No pressure on you at NYU to publish or perish.
Terrific pressure. Publisher perish. I published like crazy, including that article on gambling. Yes, I published a lot because I had published more than others because I was doing this baseball stuff. So unless I published as much as anybody, they would think I was wasting
time.
My time.
Sure, this is a hobby.
Yeah, so I worked very hard to publish. Therefore, that's why, I mean, finally I got married again after 25 years of being single because all I did was work. So I was single from 1951 when I got divorced until I met Elizabeth in 1977. 51,
25.
Yeah.
And that's when you could have traveled in the summer, if you weren't teaching summer school, I mean.
I didn't have time.
All the work you were doing, all the research.
Yeah, so that's why I advise you, go to San Francisco, and who do you want to go with?
Marion.
So you and Marion go to San Francisco, and the next time you go up to Cooperstown, stay at the Otisaga and live it up just a little bit, because before you know it, it's too late.
Okay, I will make those promises. And thank you so much for all these
interviews. In my memory or my honor?
In your honor. Okay.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.